If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Some of you may know that I grew up in a family business run by my dad, a grocery store, but it had a butcher shop. It was known far and wide on the Southwest side, and I know that quality means something, and that's why we drive 2 hours from Northwest Indiana all the way to the Northwest side of the city of Chicago to Joseph's Finest Meats at 7101 West Addison Street. Before you go there, you got to be prepared, so I've got a list for you. Do you have a pen? Italian sausage, hot. Italian sausage, mild. Get pork chops, but order them thick. And of course, get some beef too, like bone-in ribeye steaks. Nothing like it. And if you don't know exactly what to get or how to cook it, ask Ben or Sal and tell them John Cass sent you. And I'd like to tip my hat to Joseph, the patriarch, the owner, the founder who built this store for his family with his two sons, Ben and Sal. In his mid-90s, he had serious heart surgery and he made a triumphant return. He loves his place, and I do too. And so does anyone who shops there. It's like family. They care about the details. They care about you. Joseph's Finest Meats, 7101 West Addison Street, Chicago. A family tradition since 1977, and a proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way Podcast. The worst sound in the world comes from the throat of a father or mother of a child who's been killed by an illegal migrant protected by powerful politicians as the news media begins to edge away from them, ignoring their child and their pain. I heard that sound myself on this podcast, The Chicago Way, when Joe Abraham, father of Katie Abraham, who was killed by a drunk driver, a migrant driving 75 miles an hour at a red light in Urbana, and he was trying to get Governor Pritzker and the other Democrats to listen to him. They wouldn't even acknowledge his pain. And that sound, the desperate sound in the throat. Their sorrow is overwhelming. The fact that their sorrow is ignored by journalism, and journalism serves the political overlords, overwhelms them. Their throats clench up, and what remains is a ladder, a climbing ladder of anguish and high-pitched screeching for desperate breath. It is the worst sound in the world I heard coming out of Joe Abraham's mouth. I thought of all those parents of the angel moms and dads out in America, from Katie Steinle in 2015, shot in the back while she was holding her father's hand, and all that. Help me, Dad, she said, help me. And Lakin Riley, and so on and so on and on, to Sheridan Gorman, to Katie Abraham, and all the others. And I'm just asking, think of the parents' anguish. The common thread to all this is that there are people who should not be on our streets threatening the people who are going about their daily lives. Sheridan Gorman wanting to look at the Northern Lights, the left, and the Democrats don't even want to acknowledge what they've done with their policies. We'll talk about it all with Rafael Menguel, our friend, contributing editor of the City Journal and a member of the Manhattan Institute. And Jeff Carlin is here again, as always. Jeff is the executive producer of WGN Radio, a compassionate man, friend of cats, baker of pies. And me, I'm John Cass, editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And you, as you're trying to stay away from the violent, and as the political leaders of the Democratic Party tell you, don't be at the wrong place at the wrong time, you're on the Chicago Way Podcast. on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Well, I say it all the time, but as promised, we are joined by a man who is brilliant in the field of criminology and crime and policy and policing policy. His name, Rafael Mangual of City Journal. I don't know how many accolades or titles he has, but
too many,
right? But I think the one that really counts is you want to listen to this guy who explains these problems to us clearly. Rafael, welcome to the Chicago Way.
Thanks for having me back, John. It's always great to be with you, really. And thank you for the kind words as well.
Well, I mean it because I'm not an AM jock. You know, I really mean what I'm saying here. You have explained in detail complicated things. Here's one. Why won't the left acknowledge Sherrod Gorman, Katie Abraham, the girl in Georgia, and on, the victims line up? Why won't they acknowledge it?
Well, they won't acknowledge it because it would complicate the narrative that they've carefully crafted over the last several decades, which is the American left is the party of compassion, right? They need to position themselves as the moral betters of anyone to the right of Mao, essentially. And so,
I've got my hand up.
The second they start acknowledging that some of the policy positions that they have not just taken passively, but that they have aggressively agitated for, that they have violently agitated for, the second that they admit that some of those policies have had downsides that have come to pass and that have been absorbed by their very constituents, people will start to question the morality of the stances that they take. I mean, I find myself, in these situations a lot with respect to our sort of more traditional crime debates, where people on the left who are pro-decarceration or pro-depolicing will, speak as if prison is the worst thing that you can do to another human being, when we know full well that the reasons that people ended up in prison have a lot to do with even worse things that they've done to other human beings. And, once people start to understand that, hey, actually, maybe decarceration isn't such a compassionate position if what it's going to lead to is some guy with 20 or 30 or 40 prior arrests, right, hacking a young woman to death on the subway on her way home from work, as happened to Irina Zarutska in North Carolina. The more that people start to realize that, the more that they start to wake up. And that's one of the reasons why the left began losing power in 2020. And certainly, I think with the 2024 election. So they're going to guard that pretty close.
Yeah, I call it the Justice Warrior Olympics, really, right? Who can stand the tallest in this. And I also want to make sure we get your titles, and you are a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, editor of the City Journal, and a member of the Council on Criminal Justice, because you do a lot, man. You go through a lot of debt.
Those are the titles. Those some titles, yeah.
Some titles. I just want to make sure, throw some out there.
I appreciate it.
Every JohnCast news column starts with an idea that is watered by a good cup of coffee. That search for the perfect cup is where my love of coffee and writing began. And that perfect cup comes from Kribi Coffee, K-R-I-B-I Coffee, roasted locally in Chicago. Kribi's latest offering is Big Bloom, with sweet floral brightness and berry notes. This Ethiopian blend is the perfect spring cup of coffee. And because it's air roasted, it's never bitter. You can enjoy that moment savoring the backyard, your garden, or your kitchen window. Bloom in a 12-ounce bag. Or try the Cribby Tasting Trio, featuring Mount Oku Light Roast, Hyper Slap, Dark Roast, and Big Bloom. As always, Cribby Coffee offers roast level and grind that are fully customizable for all coffees online or in the cafe. Cribby also gives back by supporting African coffee farmers and creating jobs in Chicago's North Lawndale neighborhood through their new roastery. You can order at cribbycoffee.com. It's perfect for Easter, Mother's Day, or a thoughtful just because. Or any coffee lover. You stop by in a beautiful April morning or May morning, you might want to bring a coffee cake, and you got the Cribby Coffee. That's the way to slow down the mind and be ready to meet the day. Carpe diem with Cribby Coffee, a proud sponsor of John Cass News and the Chicago Way Podcast. Cribby Coffee, K-R-I-B-I-Coffee.com. Cheers.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
To back to Chicago, because it's the Chicago Way and everything, and all politics is local. You know, the Sheridan Gorman shooting was a textbook situation for what we're trying to keep out, what we're, as in the people who are the level-headed thinkers here in this country. This guy couldn't get charged until he was being done treated for TB, so that's a problem. He's been in this country illegally a couple of times now, and it's understood that he may have the mental capacity of like a small kid. So for all those reasons and more, if he was coming into this country, it probably should have been under some reason of importance, and it wasn't just him sleeping in, right?
I mean, who's saying
his lawyers are saying that
his criminal defense lawyers are arguing that he is not.
But John, that's not the point. I'm not arguing
I wanted to make that clear, sir.
You're coming at me like I'm making the argument.
No, I just wanted to make
my point is that whatever, there are plenty of reasons why this guy should not have come into the country and shouldn't be here, shouldn't have had this interaction, shouldn't have had a gun, shouldn't been on the streets of Chicago. And yet they make the argument that, and this is the Alder Maria Haddon, who is, I live in Edgewater, so I know her name, I know her well. Is always behind the ball on this stuff, is always trying to make sure that violence isn't show up in the headlines. And what is her response to the situation? This young woman was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Which is, by the way, one of the most disgusting things
that
I've heard anyone say, within 24 hours of a tragedy like this. Not that there's ever a right time to make an argument as stupid as that.
Right.
But it is just insane to me, right? Not only does she bend over backwards, to suggest that Gorman was somehow at fault here, right? That, it was wrong place, wrong time. Well, if we have control over where we are and when we're there, right, then, if it's just a matter of wrong place, wrong time, then we could have avoided this. And that, that's the wrong tack to take with something like this. But she also even went so far as to suggest that maybe a Gorman actually startled this person.
Right.
Caused him to believe he needed to shoot her in, I believe, in the back as she was running away. I mean,
she compelled him. He had no choice but to murder that child. Right.
It's insanity. I mean, and one of the things that I put up on X after I saw that insane comment was that, I just wish that, Democrats in cities like Chicago would just put out a comprehensive list of all the places that we can't go and the time can't go there, so that we can finally take some affirmative steps to avoid being shot in the head for no reason.
Right. Give us a guidebook for not being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So we can put at the top of the list, the end of the pier at 1 a.m. Okay, where else?
Yeah, on one of the most liberal campuses in the country.
Right. Exactly. I mean, in a city, by the way, that has always had problems with public safety. But, the downtown area, the Loop area, the pier, had traditionally been very safe. I mean, I went to law school in the city of Chicago. We lived there for 3 years. My wife is originally from there, from a very different part of the city of Chicago. We lived in Lakeview. We used to go out you know, bar hopping and stuff and walk around downtown super late at night and never felt unsafe. You can walk up and down the Mag Mile, you know, back then and never felt unsafe. You know, the idea that there are just some places that you can't go and that we should just shrug that off as part of city life, that is at the root of the urban decay that, you know, people in Chicago and the leadership class seem hell bent on bringing about.
Before we move on from this alder creature, I have one thing to say. I'm reminded of, in discussions like this, I'm reminded of George Orwell, who in 1984 wrote, quote, "It was always the women, and above all the young ones, who were the most bigoted adherents of the party, the swallowers of slogans, the amateur spies, and nosers out of unorthodoxy." Now, I don't want to pick a fight with half the population of America, but what is with the women in this country that allow that put an arm around Maria Haddon and allow this to perpetuate and to breed? Why?
Yeah, well, look, I think that's an interesting question. And I think part of the answer lies in the fact that, you know, these policy prescriptions, these policy debates from the left are very much coded in sort of feminine language, right? I mean, it's about compassion. It's about understanding. It's about, you know, all those are qualities that, for better or worse, are generally associated with the feminine. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why they create the balance that we need for our society to function. But you can't make an entire policy program based solely on compassion. Right. There needs to be a balance. You need to have introduced into the conversation people who are familiar with and comfortable with aggression, because that's the only way that you're going to understand that there exists some bad people who need to be controlled. And sometimes that control has to be physical. And sometimes criminals need to be incapacitated. And sometimes they can't be let into the country at all. And having that debate on real terms instead of in this la la land or fantasy world in which everyone's a good person, is what brings us down this road to hell.
And John, on your question, it echoes of, you know, when did you stop beating your wife? You know, I explained. So I'm going to go tactfully here in my response that I think it's the compassion piece. Absolutely. I think that's much easier argument emotionally to make.
We can't live without compassion.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I feel myself compassionate. I don't feel effeminate, and I, you know, that's the way I live. I see this as that base argument, and there isn't really a base argument here. I get the decarceration thing, right? We don't, you know, yes, you can statistically look at numbers and make them appear to be one-sided or aggressive or faulted. That's fine. But this argument, I don't know. There's no base here, right? What are they arguing? They're arguing that this guy who is violent, has made bad choices, is coming from a bad place, deserves to be here in this country, and that, you know, oops, we might have a run with him and just trying to get shot. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around the base argument.
It's not just that he deserves to be here, right? I think it's deeper than that. I think they believe that we have a responsibility to let them in because we are evil, because we are faulted, because our society is so deeply flawed and so immoral, and that our founding is so corrupt that the least that we can do is open our gates to anyone else in the world who wants to come and enjoy the fruits of, you know, the terrible conquest that America represents. And that I think is a big part of this. I don't think that they see America as legitimate. So why would they see its borders as legitimate?
Yeah.
And you get people like Hayden in a room long enough, and, you know, maybe it takes only one drink, if that, for them to admit to you that there's something about America that just doesn't sit well with them.
That's wild.
But that's used as their organizing tool.
Yeah.
That's used as their organizing tool throughout all these disciplines. Journalism has become, for lack of a better term, feminized. I don't know about the arts, but I can say without question that the compassion of the mother is reflected in the journalism writ large, but we can't have analysis like that. It doesn't fit. the real facts of life.
I agree.
Yeah. And that's the rub, right? I mean, we need, they demonize the left and you know, this group, they demonize anybody who isn't in the compassion camp. You know, if you're in the cold, hard truth and reality camp, you're an a-hole or you're a Nazi and get out of here. You don't deserve to be here for some reason.
Right.
Well, hearing you guys talk, I'm going to put my Dance Volt t-shirt on. and go watch El Cid, okay?
So, Rafa, it's a good argument, right? I mean, it's working, clearly, that there are these things happening. These people are in power now, and we're at a point where, you know, they're at the, I would just hope, the zenith of their power in this movement that's been going on my whole lifetime, this PC, you know,
push
step forward. How do you counter it? I mean, what's the argument? What's the action plan? I mean, where do we go?
I mean, I think it's just highlighting reality, right? I mean, these episodes, and I think the murder of Ms. Gorman is going to be one of those. They wake people up. Irina Zarutska's murder woke people up. The more that happens, the more that people start coming to terms with the grim reality that policy has consequences, and sometimes those consequences are going to be deadly. They will start asking more questions, and the more that they start asking questions, the more opportunities that we will have to illustrate the incoherence of the modern American left. And so it's going to take time. This is not going to be an overnight thing. I don't think that this is a quick fix. There is a very intoxicating power that comes with genuinely believing that you are the morally superior being and in the morally superior class. And when you have an entire mainstream media apparatus dedicated to spending its billions of dollars to, you know, applauding every time that you toe the party line and patting you on the back and telling you that you're right. It's not easy, but eventually everyone gets mugged by reality.
But in the meantime, think of all those parents.
That's right.
What we call angel parents.
Destroyed. I mean, destroyed. And, you know, this reminds me, and I hate that this happens often enough that I can't even remember this gentleman's name. But there was an incident a couple years ago where a father was testifying before Congress after his daughter had been murdered by a repeat offender. And the anger and the sadness combined to just make his voice so incredibly chilling. And it was one of the more moving things that I've ever seen happen in front of Congress, because you start to grapple with and reckon with the pain that is being caused to good people, to good Americans who've done the right thing, who followed the rules, who've led good lives. And they are the ones paying the price for, you know, policy choices that, again, so many of the Democrats who hold themselves up as, you know, compassionate are almost never in a position to have to absorb the costs of.
Why is that? They're never responsible for their actions. You can release all the killers you want from jail, but somehow their families are not affected.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would think that if they had to actually live in the places where this stuff concentrates, you know, that might change them, although it's not always the case, right? I mean, isn't Brandon Johnson from the Austin neighborhood on the west side over there? I mean, if anyone should understand.
But he has 150 police officers.
That's true, but he didn't always, right? And he
won't.
Right.
Next cycle, but he does now.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is, you know, sometimes I think we underestimate the intoxicating power of that kind of narrative for people and how blinding it can be. Much people are willing to sort of close their eyes to the downside risk of what they're advocating for when that advocacy comes with all of the moral accolades.
All you have to do is spend some time in a major metropolitan newspaper newsroom to see that the social dynamics of what you're speaking are evident. And they color the debate, so they color reality.
Yeah.
And people want to succeed, and they're ambitious, and so they go along with the angry popular girls, or as I call them, awfuls. And and that's what they're called now, you know? And I don't know. I don't want to poke a bear, a mother bear, when she's sleeping with her cubs, but I don't know how else to get around this if we don't start talking about it as a real thing.
Yeah. And it's a real thing with real consequences. I mean, I was just saying the other day, you know, my wife is from the west side of Chicago, from Humboldt Park. And so we go back to the city, you know, usually at least once a year to visit family. And when we would go, we would always stay downtown. We always stayed at the Hyatt on Wacker. That was the hotel we would always stay at because it was, you know, right in the middle of everything. We could get to our favorite restaurants. We could go shopping on the Mag Mile. You know, we could walk the river, all that stuff.
And now?
The last time that we were there staying downtown, our son was still in a stroller and must have been like, I don't know, 1.5 maybe. In the middle of the day, we're walking down Michigan after going shopping. And here are these like absolutely, just piss drunk gangbangers with tattoos on their faces, being loud and literally trying to hit passersby with this massive handle of either vodka or tequila, or, you know, or light rum that they were just swinging at random people, thinking it was hilarious. They even hit somebody. I mean, and nobody, everyone just avoided them. No one called the police. No one ran. No one tackled them out of fear. And here we are trying to steer our stroller, you know, into traffic safely, which is a contradiction in terms, just to get away from these people at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday in what should be one of the most safest, heavily policed parts of the city. And, you know, that since then, every time we've gone back to Chicago with the family, we've stayed out by the airport.
And you're not alone in that, I'm sure. I mean, that's city is reporting, you know, record numbers of tourism, but I got to believe that people see those headlines and certainly think twice about spending money in the city. But Rafa, speaking of cities, you know, you're in New York. You guys have had, I'd say, a coup of power in Mondami. What's life like there in the Big Apple?
I mean, it's interesting, you know, we're coming up on 100 days into the Mamdani administration now here in New York. And I think everyone's still kind of waiting with bated breath to see how bad things are going to get. You know, we've already had an attempted terrorist attack that happened outside of Gracie Mansion, where two young jihadists from Pennsylvania drove into the city and threw homemade bombs into a crowd at police officers and at right-wing anti-Islam protesters. That was an interesting episode because one of the things that Zohra Mamdani made hay about as a candidate was that the NYPD has this unit called the SRG, the Strategic Response Group, and it's part of the NYPD's Critical Response Command, which, you know, has a large counterterrorism component. And this is the group that's usually called in to police really large gatherings where, you know, a counterterrorism component might make some sense, where, you know, there's potentiality for a riot. And they've been really, really good at that job. But leftists don't like protests being policed. They prefer those moments to be chaotic. And so Zohra Mamdani came out and said, well, I'm going to dismantle the SRG. And that was one of his big campaign promises. And wouldn't you know, the first big protest, which was happening outside of Gracie Mansion, a week after hostilities kicked off in Iran, that's touching the subject of Islam, somehow, for some reason, the SRG was not on scene. And that's when you had these people throw bombs. And yet that does not seem to have been a wake-up call for Mamdani, who continues to say that he is managing the process of sidelining that group and dismantling it. But so far, he has kept his powder dry on some of the more insane campaign promises, in part because he doesn't have the power to do some of them, right? Like raise taxes, But he is, you know, on the policing front, at least, I mean, he has committed not just to disbanding the SRG. He wants to give the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which is the equivalent of what COPPA is in Chicago, final authority to discipline police officers. So police officers would no longer be disciplined by their commanders, but rather these anti-cop civilians in a completely separate organization, which would totally upend incentives. But so far that has not yet happened. And then, of course, he said he was going to stand up this new Department of Community Safety that would take over mental health response from the NYPD, which, of course, is a lot easier to say than it is to actually do. Sure. And so last week he announced, as if he had fulfilled this campaign promise, a new Office of Community Safety staffed by precisely two individuals to manage some existing pilot programs that don't have anywhere near the capacity to even make a dent in the NYPD's mental health related workload. So
he hired two bureaucrats to sit in an office and push paper around.
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? We had a shooting in Queens, New York a few weeks back. It was an individual who, you know, suffered from some kind of mental health affliction, was having an episode. His mother called the police because he was being violent, destroying things in the house. The police show up, you know, have a very cordial interaction with the mother outside the house. She invites them in. And the second the first officer steps into the house over the threshold, this guy grabs a knife, charges him. The officer retreats. The guy goes through a door that the officer closed between them. And, you know, was stabbing at the officer who eventually shoots him. The guy survives, and Mom Donnie goes to visit him in the hospital.
He visited the offender in the hospital?
He visited the offender in the hospital and then called on the Queens DA not to press charges, and used that as another opportunity, and in fact cited that case in the announcement of the Office for Community Safety. But what's wild to me is that none of the pilot programs that that office is now going to manage that do alternative mental health response would have agreed to respond to a call like that. Nah. And this, you know, there's this kind of sleight of hand going on, right? Mamdani wants everyone to believe that there exists some stable of qualified, credentialed mental health professionals who are willing to work for a municipal salary and answer calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, weekends and holidays included, who are going to be willing to put themselves at the kind of risk that NYPD officers put themselves in. And it's just not true. One of the programs that Mamdani is modeling this idea off of and is absorbing in this new office is a program called Be Heard, which sends a team of individuals to respond to these mental health calls. And it includes an EMT and some mental health workers as well. But if you look at the policies of that program, which has only ever responded to, I think, no more than 25% of the mental health calls in the areas in which they operate, by policy, they will refuse to take any calls involving individuals who have a weapon, who have exhibited violent tendencies, according to the caller, who have expressed suicidal ideation, right? So any of the difficult calls, which are the calls where there's actually a risk of a use of force, those are still going to the NYPD, even in the places where these programs operate. So unless Zohra Mamdani had some kind of conversation with these individuals and got them to agree, to without any firearms of their own or any real protection to start putting themselves between crazy people with weapons and, you know, the parents or the callers or the public, it's just not reality. And so this is just another example of, like, you have these progressive candidates who, you know, go on and on with these radical ideas and, you know, they're very compelling speakers and they get you to believe them. And then it comes time to govern and you realize that they can't actually do 90% of the things that they told you that they were going to do.
Right. It's like skipping stones. They skip the surface, making ripples until they run out of steam and they sink.
100%.
Jeff and I saw a couple weeks ago, last week in Chicago, there were people on the L on the train. And their eyes were down. They would not look up because there was a man with two hammers screaming, holding two hammers in his hands, screaming that he was going to kill.
I saw this video. This was a guy who said he had just gotten out of Stateville two days earlier. Right.
I don't know if it's so true.
Whoever let him out made a mistake.
Well, there's been a lot of that lately.
But there's a balance I'm trying to find between the things that you're mentioning and the people who look at the ground because they're too afraid. And then the outrage people that are pushing the outrage meter constantly again and again, kind of like Fox News on its worst days. Mm. And I'm trying to find a common, decent attitude, and I can't find it, Jeff and Raphael. I can't find it. I'm lost.
You know, I think regular people see an episode like that and they ask themselves the question that they always ask themselves in the wake of, you know, some kind of tragedy where, you know, you have an individual that has a clear record in history indicating that they're unfit to live among us. And that question is, why the hell is this person out on the street? Here you have an individual with an insane criminal history who was just let out of prison. Again, why? Why? And the answer is because Democrats in cities like Chicago and in states like Illinois simply cannot bring themselves to acknowledge the sad reality that some people are just damaged goods. They are incorrigible. They are incapable of living among us. And therefore, we have a responsibility as citizens, as guardians of society, to shield the rest of us from the violence of those individuals by keeping them incapacitated, whether that's in jail, whether that's in prison, whether that's in a secure mental health facility that they're not free to leave. And it's a discomfort with that reality that drives Democratic politics in America.
And John, your middle ground, you'd argue there is that not only, as Rafa, you mentioned, they're protecting the society writ large, but do we say we have a responsibility to protect that person who is the damaged goods from being in a situation where a cop has to shoot them, or they kill someone, or they, you know, put them, they need to be safe too, right? That's the double-edged sword of it.
That's exactly right.
Oh, that's compassionate.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Actually, there's something that a lot of people don't realize. So, you know, the people who make these decarceration arguments, these anti-institutionalization arguments, right, they're making these arguments on behalf of the individuals who would have been incarcerated or institutionalized. And they're assuming that that experience is a net negative for those individuals, when in reality, it's actually the other way around, in part because of what you just mentioned, Jeff, which is that oftentimes these individuals will find themselves at risk of being shot by police or being shot by somebody else in the neighborhood or beat up by somebody else in the neighborhood, right? Notice where that episode on the CTA train the other day happened, right? He was saying, wielding hammer, saying he wants to kill white people. I believe that was somewhere in the Loop. Right. That was not just after the 95th Street stop on the Red Line with a very different crowd on the train that may have not taken too kindly to his threats. And so there's actually
spoken by a man who knows Chicago.
Exactly. there's a reality in the research, which a lot of people are unaware of, which is that, you know, prisons actually increase the life expectancy of prisoners. People believe prison's a terrible place because it's dangerous and all that stuff. And that's true. But what we don't realize is we don't realize how to properly compare it to the alternative. And if the alternative is somebody being out in the neighborhood where they have a ton of enemies, where they're likely to find themselves in violent altercations, that people are not going to immediately respond to, like prison guards. It actually turns out that the experience of prison is a net positive, at least with respect to the general health of the individuals who end up there. And so, you know, maybe by getting research out like that, you know, we can change at least some minds of the more reasonable people. But again, I doubt it. I think, you know, all of these people are driven by this kind of intoxicating sense that they are, you know, just morally superior, and you know that's not an easy thing to override.
Oh man,
sorry to depress you all on a Sunday.
No, I'm just, you know what, I was thinking of a painting as you were speaking. I used it in the Sunday column, August Schenck. It's called Anguish, and it's about a mother sheep, a ewe, and her dead lamb, and a crowd of crows hemming her in, attack, about to attack the lamb, the baby. Mm-hmm. And the anguish from the mother is just so, and I've heard this, if you've been covering crime, and you have for years, Raphael, you've heard this cry from mothers all across the country. And so is Jeff.
Blood curdling, isn't it?
What's worse is the indifference and political utilization of that grief for political purposes.
What also gets me is just the cavalier attitude with which the dice is rolled with the lives of these people. I think even, you know, the completely captured leftist understands that there's at least some risk associated with their policy programs. I'm not entirely sure how they justify it, but the fact that they justify it is what really angers me more than anything else, right? Because it's like walking into a casino, and finding a high limit roulette table and just, you know, throwing money around, but you know, it's not yours. It's the 401k of the guy next to you, right? Like,
right.
You know, they're just imposing these costs on communities that already have so much to deal with, that are already disadvantaged in so many ways. And we know that those are going to be the communities that absorb the risk, and yet the decision doesn't change.
It seems like common sense, as we say here, is served regularly. And by the heapful, and that's a lot of it right there. I mean, it doesn't, I understand, you know, we've broken it down, right? You got the emotional argument is strong. It's hard to not want to be compassionate, but that compassion has got to go both ways and at least get people in the room together. I mean, I just, this demonization of everybody who disagrees with you, it's just been an Achilles heel to moving forward.
That poor mentally challenged or emotionally challenged man with the hammers will be attacked because that's the nature of the street. Mm-hmm. He will be attacked and destroyed by others who are fearing. There's not going to be kindly Father Flanagan putting his arms out saying, okay, young man, please come with me. A shower and a hug and a warm bed.
And I thought you were going to say Father Flager for a second. I was like, that's a, I haven't heard.
No, I know Father Flager and I'm not going to say that, but... But yeah, there's no such creature, and what is replacing that is a gang of people who are afraid of mental illness, and then they will attack it,
mm-hmm.
and that we know that savagery already. So, what is more compassionate, guys, to take that troubled man off the street or let him out, and to satisfy the political whims of Tony Preckwinkle and Governor Pritzker? I don't think there's a question, but that's just me.
I agree.
Well said, sir.
Rafa, what are you working on now?
Yeah.
Oh boy, a lot of stuff. One of the things I'm actually really excited about is a piece I'm writing for the next issue of City Journal, which is a profile of the Memphis Safe Task Force, one of these federal task forces that President Trump has launched in, you know, what has traditionally been one of America's most dangerous cities in Memphis, Tennessee. And it's just incredible how much crime has fallen through the floor. And so I went out to Memphis and I did some ride-alongs with the task force and did some interviews with the folks involved. And it's a really great story that again, I hope will resonate with the compassionate among us. Because again, here you have this great American city with, you know, so much potential and so much to offer that has just been consistently plagued by unbelievable levels of brutal violence. And for years, people have just treated it as if there's nothing that could be done, as if this was just a fact of life. And then President Trump comes in, the person that we're told hates people in cities like this, right? And what does he do? He commits an enormous amount of resources and treasure to flooding this city with law enforcement officers who go out and, you know, they're not solving metaphysical equations. They're just doing good old fashioned policing, and it's working. And so many of just the regular people in the city that I talked to were just grateful. I mean, they were going out and enjoying the city for the first time. I mean, it really is just, I think, a cool story for people to hear and read. So I'm excited about putting that one together.
How is the hard, angry left responding to this?
I mean, they're trying their best. There was a piece in the New York Times that, seemed to imply that there was some, racial tension, but, all of that stuff seems to be falling flat and none of it seems to be really sticking in the city itself, which is actually interesting because it's a city with a Democratic mayor with a far left DA. Who probably doesn't appreciate a lot of these cases being taken federal so that they don't have to, take the chance with his office dropping the ball as he normally does. And the guy's name is Steve Mulroy. He's one of the worst DAs in the country, in my opinion. But results will change the political dynamic sometimes. And I think this Memphis Save Task Force is one of those examples.
I can't wait to read it. Yeah. When will it run?
It should be in the summer issue, which usually comes out in July. So.
All right. I can't wait.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Rafa, since we're recording, one more question. It's a food related question.
Okay.
Chef always asks our guests, what about their favorite dining spots in Chicago?
Ooh. There's an Italian restaurant that we used to really enjoy going to, that we've gone to the last couple times. We were in the city, Osteria Via Stato.
Call me again.
Osteria Via Stato. I think it's on Ontario.
Oh, no, I haven't been.
Oh, it's really good. Really good. I mean, I haven't been in some years now, but that used to be one of our favorite places. And then Havana.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Where is it, on Chicago Avenue?
No, Havana is on, is it Clark in Illinois?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's on, Clark. Yeah, it's,
yeah, I know it's on Clark.
400 block rather of Clark.
Yeah.
Roast pork, etc.
Oh, yeah. And fantastic mojitos.
Oh,
yeah. So those are always places I enjoyed. Those were kind of staples for us when we were living there, and we try to go back whenever we're in town.
Well, there you
go. Choices.
Maybe we can see you the next time you come in.
I'll let you know. We'll probably be heading out there at some point this summer.
All right. Good. If you don't mind a guy clomping along with the clawfoot cane, I'll be doing my best to keep up with you guys.
That'd be great.
All right. Well, Rafa, thanks for joining us. Join us again next time, won't you?
I absolutely will. Thanks so much for having me back on.
All right. Thank you.
So, thanks, Rafa.
All right, my friend.
For Rafael Mangual of City Journal and the Manhattan Institute, crime expert and policy expert on crime, writing in the City Journal on Memphis and the New Awakening. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, and friend of cats, baker of pies. And for me, John Cass, of John Cass News, editor there, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us again next time on the next Chicago Way on WGN+.